KEXP thanks contributing donors and the Real Networks Foundation for supporting Mind Over Matters.
This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Mitch Friedman, Executive Director of Conservation Northwest. Mitch Friedman is here today to tell us about the Columbia Highlands Initiative, which is aimed at addressing threats to wildlife as well as rural economies posed by pressures from overdevelopment and climate change. Welcome, Mitch.
Thank you, Diane.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about Conservation Northwest?
Sure. I founded Conservation Northwest a little over 20 years ago, and our mission from the beginning has been to protect and connect the large, mainly mountain-based ecosystems of our region, from the Washington coast to the Canadian Rockies. It's that scale of conservation, large protected areas that are linked together so that wildlife can move between them, that's necessary to provide a safe and viable future for the most space-demanding and charismatic wildlife that define our region.
Would you now describe the Columbia Highlands area, the location and type of land, and what makes it special?
The Columbia Highlands is maybe the last place that folks around here think about when we conceptualize Washington. It's the northeast corner of the state. It isn't like the dry desert of the Columbia Basin. It's actually semi-mountainous, ranging from foothills to fairly steep peaks of the Selkirk Mountains. These are the mountain ranges that are sort of stepping stones between the Cascades and the Rockies. So if you're driving or flying the I-90 corridor and you look north and scratch your head, yeah, them are mountains there. They're really diverse. There's everything from, sagebrush and dry ponderosa pine forests to actually pockets of western hemlock and western red cedar. Just magnificent and very resilient, wildlife-rich area.
Would you elaborate on the importance of the Columbia Highlands area?
We're really concerned right now with providing safe passage for wildlife between the Cascades and the Rockies, allowing wildlife populations to remain connected genetically so that, a hypothetical wolverine can move from one population to the other and breed, share genes. That's always valuable. It allows small populations to be, in effect, larger and more viable for the long term. But when you add climate change into the mix, it becomes imperative. These types of corridors, I think of them as lifeboats for the movement, not seasonal migration, but actual long-term movement and adaptation of species and ecosystems. As temperatures generally warm, wildlife and really all species need to adjust their ranges either uphill or northward to track the changing environment. And by linking the Cascades to the Rockies, not really in an east-west direction, but more a northeast by southwest direction, we're cross-latticing these great giant nature reserve systems that we have in western North America. And that's a great favor, the best favor we can do to wildlife here.
Would you comment also on the human populations that are located in the Columbia Highlands area?
If you were to drive Highway 20 from the Mount Vernon area generally, go east across the state, by the time you got to the Columbia Highlands, towns like Republic and Kettle Falls and Colville, you would think that you were in Idaho or western Montana. Demographically, socioeconomically, politically, they're more similar to those northern Rockies states than to our west side. These are fairly conservative areas politically and still fairly resource-dependent economically. There's logging and mining and ranching. For that reason, maybe among others, Washington State, we've got a higher percentage of our state in protected lands, wilderness and national park, than any other state except Alaska. But 99% of those protected acres are in the western half of the state. So conservation-wise, northeastern Washington, the Columbia Highlands, is our neglected corner. It's the place that we really need to catch up to bring conservation to the standard that these beautiful ecosystems deserve.
Well, you've been alluding to this, but what are the reasons for developing a Columbia Highlands Initiative?
The Columbia Highlands Initiative is our way of first getting the wilderness on our federal lands, the Colville National Forest, and secondly, to also address better forestry across our public lands and apply conservation measures on adjoining private lands that will maintain open space, agricultural preservation, and safe passage for wildlife across that whole northeastern Washington area. So if we're successful in the Columbia Highlands Initiative, in future years, we will have a genetic link between the wildlife populations of the Cascades and the Rockies. Sophisticated scientific research modeling is demonstrating that the best opportunities for linking wildlife populations, grizzly bears, wolves, lynx, wolverine, between the Cascades and the Rockies runs right through this area, through these sort of stepping stone mountain ranges.
What do you see as the key threats to the Columbia Highlands area?
Development is really a threat everywhere. You know, when I started in conservation, which was when I was at UW in the mid-80s, the big threat was clear-cutting of ancient forests on our federal lands. We've dealt with that in large measure. And I feel pretty good about the future of old growth and roadless areas in the region. But on our public lands, a proliferation of off-road vehicles, people driving quads, in some cases fairly lawlessly. And on private lands, because farms, forests, ranches, and orchards, they face declining prices to globalization and increasing expenses. And at the same time, the real estate value of their land, because our population is growing so fast and is so incredibly mobile, and everybody wants a piece of heaven, that if you're a rancher, even if you're the third or fourth generation on a piece of land, you're really struggling in most cases. And that opportunity to sell your land to a developer for subdivision is always there and more attractive than debt. So we have to think very hard about how we seam together conservation on both public and private lands so that we provide patterns of habitat that work for the wildlife species most at risk.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Mitch Friedman, Executive Director of Conservation Northwest. Our topic is the Columbia Highlands Initiative, and you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Would you underscore the key elements of the Columbia Highlands proposal?
Sure. First of all, we've taken a little bit of a different approach. Typically in the American West, when wilderness is proposed, it's a polarizing issue where you have the timber industry and ranchers and others on one side and environmentalists on the others. It becomes a urban-rural fight. We found a way to collaborate. We've been working with community leaders and leading timber and other interests in northeastern Washington for a half dozen years or more. We've even designed and accomplished forest restoration projects, about two dozen of them, on the Colville National Forest, on public federal land, working with the timber industry. And because of this background, we've been able to work together with leaders in that community, including owners of timber mills, to agree upon a long-term vision for the entire 1.1 million acres of the Colville National Forest. That vision allocates to ongoing long-term active management, logging, those acres that are most appropriate for that use, near communities and infrastructure, places with roads already in, places where it makes sense to provide jobs and wood, and also manage fuels to reduce the risk of wildfire to communities and homes. But there's a lot of other acres where we really want to restore areas that haven't been managed well in the past, thin out overgrown forests so that large dry ponderosa pines can resume their historic natural structure, open park-like conditions, fixing streams, pulling out roads where we don't need them or want them anymore. And lastly, there's our wild areas, wilderness. So we've been able to agree on this comprehensive vision. And in July of this year, we trotted out a proposal for legislation. And that legislation would be 215,000 acres of new wilderness area. Wilderness is the highest form of protection in the land, has to be designated by Congress. One can hunt and continue to graze cattle on wilderness, but no roads, no logging, no mechanized or motorized vehicles. Secondly, 145,000 acres along the east flank of the Kettle Crest. The Kettle Range runs north-south between Republic and Calvo. And that whole east flank of the Kettle Range we propose for a national conservation area where there would be no new motorized trails allowed. Roadless areas within there would be protected to very high standards. And the only logging that could occur would be restoration only. So you're only improving the forest, and any logs that you took out of there would be incidental to the ecological objectives. We also propose 3 new national recreation areas. That's our public lands proposal that has to be implemented by Congress. It has to pass Congress, and we're calling upon our congressional delegation to introduce a bill early in the next session.
What were some of the challenges in coming up with the proposal, getting people to agree from all the different groups?
If you and I were talking 5 years ago, I would have told you a story about collaboration with the timber industry. My theory then was that if conservationists and the timber industry got married, everybody would come and throw rice and it would be all downhill from there. It hasn't been quite that easy. These are still very conservative communities with some entrenched interest, motorized recreation in particular. And in the last year, we've made great progress with the Calvo Confederated Indian Tribes. We've reached an accord that addresses some of their concerns with wildfire and economic interests. They have a few mills. At the same time, they obviously care a great deal about the land and share our vision and values in many ways. We've also made great progress with the ranching community. There's a lot of misinformation about how wilderness designation would affect those ranchers who have permits to graze on federal high country. We've been able to get better information out there. We've also been working with ranchers because the primary threats they face, it really isn't a change in land designation. It's, as I described, the development threat. You know, their budgets are very thin. And their cattle also get harassed by off-road vehicles while in that high country. So we've been working with the ranching community and making a lot of progress there, and also trying to move forward common recreation projects and other things that show it's a large landscape. There's room up there enough for everybody. And that approach has moved us further than we ever figured we'd have to go. Whether it's enough to get us to a bill, a bipartisan, bicameral bill, I don't want to do this just with Democrats fighting Republicans. The area is represented in Congress by Kathy McMorris Rogers, who's got a lot of clout. And I think there's a way to do this that's bipartisan in both houses, Senate and House, at the same time. And I think we've got a proposal with sound enough and diverse enough community backing that we're about ready for that to happen.
Would you say more about the role that ranches play in protection of the Columbia Highlands ecosystem?
Absolutely. And it goes back to our original vision. There's a lot of reasons to protect the Columbia Highlands. Beautiful wilderness, great for hiking, and it deserves great protection. There's a lot of wildlife objectives there besides just linking the Cascades to the Rockies. There's a lot of recreation objectives besides just linking the Cascades to the Rockies. But what brings Conservation Northwest to the table, first and foremost, is that connectivity. We want the Cascades and Rockies linked, and you can't provide continuous habitat between the Cascades and the Rockies working only on federal lands. The National Forest alone doesn't get it done. In between blocks of National Forest are large landscapes of ranches. We've identified those ranches that have the highest value for wildlife connectivity, and we're working with those ranchers to meet their needs so they can put the land under easement, keep it in open space and working agriculture, which meets their vision. You know, we find that ranchers, while they want to keep operating with cattle in many cases, not all of them, some are older and want out, but even those that want to sell, I've never met a rancher that wants to see the land that his family has worked sometimes for generations end up developed with double wides or McMansions or anything like that. So we're providing them an option, in some cases tax breaks, and others a revenue stream off the conservation value of their land, so they can continue to provide local agriculture, ranch or tree farm that land while keeping it in open space and wildlife habitat. And that combination of working with the key ranches so that they're permanently committed to conservation, open space, and agriculture, and working with the timber industry on the federal lands, provides us, or at least has the potential to provide us, this large-scale habitat connection.
Would you give some specific examples of your work with the ranchers and how that's played out?
Sure. I have a really fun one from just last week. I had the pleasure of hosting Brian and Deb Gotham. They're a ranching couple from, they live in Colville, but they have a 2,200-acre ranch between Republic and Sherman Pass, just north of Highway 20. And we submitted a proposal with them to the state Department of Natural Resources earlier this year for Forest Legacy Program protection of their land. Forest Legacy uses federal money run through the states to, in essence, purchase development rights from tree farmers. And in this case, the Gotham Ranch is mostly forested, so they manage for timber with cattle underneath. So it's a ranch and a tree farm. And if we're successful, public money will buy from them the development rights. So nobody ever, for eternity, could ever subdivide or develop that property. And the Gothams would be able to use that revenue from that easement sale to buy adjoining ranches that are already on the market and at risk of development. And at the end of the day, the ultimate vision is for about 4,000 or 5,000 acres of protected land between Republic and the Colville National Forest, buffering our proposed wild areas, providing recreation and wildlife value. So I got to get back to the anecdote. We had to go to Olympia last Wednesday and present an oral presentation of our proposal to a state citizen committee that ranks these projects. And the Gothams came over Tuesday evening. They had never been to Seattle. Both of them have been in northeastern Washington for generations. They're both roughly 50 years old. And it was a lot of fun. You know, we had dinner downtown, showed them around. I had to meet them at a highway exit at Rainier South at a gas station and guide them in. You know, I couldn't give them MapQuest directions. Brian's able to show me around the backcountry. I was able to show him around Seattle.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Mitch Friedman, Executive Director of Conservation Northwest. Our topic is the Columbia Highlands Initiative. How does the initiative address resilience in response to climate change?
Great question. Climate adaptation, it's as important as reducing carbon emissions, but we don't hear or think about it nearly as much. For those listeners who have read Bill McKibben or are familiar with 350.org, the message there is that even if we tied a noose around all our smokestacks and exhaust pipes today and stop burning petroleum, we would still see increases in carbon dioxide levels, greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, for maybe 50 to 60 years. And therefore, unless some genius comes up with a miracle, we have to prepare our planet, both our cities and our, you know, social communities and our natural communities, to adapt to warmer or drier conditions in different places. So how do you provide natural ecosystems the means to adapt to climate change? And one measure I've already described, and that's connectivity, paths by which wildlife and plant seeds can move and adapt. Another is providing plant communities, for instance forests, with resilience from increased disturbance. You can imagine how a hot or dry climate would affect fire frequency or fire intensity. So dry forests, such as those at lower elevations in eastern Washington, ponderosa pine forests or dry mixed conifer forests, These are places where the trees are adapted to fire. They have thick bark. And so a resilient form of that community is fewer and larger, you know, big ponderosa pines spaced apart with fire that moves through every few years and cleans out the underbrush but doesn't kill the big trees. But the condition these forests are in now, in many cases, due to lousy past management, are that they're overgrown with little trees and very dried out from competition for scarce water. That means they're vulnerable to insect or other pathogens and highly vulnerable to fire that would be at unnatural intensities and would get into the tops of the trees rather than stay at the bottom. So we improve the resilience of these forests by restoring them to more natural conditions, by thinning out, removing those little trees, which in many cases are valuable. Today's timber mills are highly efficient, and some of the mills we work with, we used to war with 10, 20 years ago because we were fighting over the big trees. Now these mills cannot process a tree larger than 12 inches wide. And it's incredible. You can take a 12-inch diameter tree and make it into 2x6s or 2x4s, and you can do about 1,000 of those an hour. It's unbelievable, the efficiency. And taking these trees out of the forest and into the mill actually is good for the forest if done right. It improves the resilience of that forest to a changing climate.
What has the Columbia Highlands Initiative accomplished so far?
Well, peace in our times. It's no exaggeration that we were warring with these very same mills just 10 years ago. And now we work with them hand in glove. They share our vision for wilderness protection, and we share their vision for forest restoration, each in its proper locations. As I mentioned earlier, we've accomplished more than 24 actual projects, timber projects, on the ground. We've worked together on a common vision for the entire Colville National Forest, and we've brought that vision to our members of Congress from the state and asked together. You know, you can imagine how these meetings go in Washington, D.C., or, for instance, many times I've been in congressional offices with, for instance, Russ Vaughan from Vaughan Brothers Timber. And Russ will talk about wilderness, and I'll talk about stumps. And it's pretty effective. But we really won't have accomplished our goals until Congress has passed legislation giving permanence to the wilderness vision that we want, and until the Forest Service has come out with new management plans, forest plans, that enshrine our vision for which acres get restored to more natural conditions and how. And also until we have a better grip on the motorized recreation situation. We need to provide quality trails for motorized recreation, give them a place where they can play, and then demand that they stay there. We need much better enforcement on the ground, much higher penalties, much more visible licensing on backcountry motorized vehicles. Because right now, particularly in the more gentle landscapes, places like the Columbia Highlands, they're just ripping it up. Anywhere there's a road that provides access to the backcountry, they shoot off that road. And, you know, in several places just in the last month, we've encountered four-wheel ORVs literally at the tops of mountains that ought to be, and we hope will soon be, wilderness.
What is most needed to bring the initiative to fruition?
Congress. We feel we have public support, even in the fairly conservative communities of northeastern Washington. The Colville Chamber of Commerce, former Representative George Nethercutt, who represented the 5th District for many years, the timber mills themselves and many others, key ranchers, pillars of the agricultural community in these areas, 6 of the 9 county commissioners of the 3 affected counties. This broad base of support for the overall vision and our collaborative work there, it says to me that this vision is ripe for legislation. There are bills in Congress now to designate new wilderness and Western Montana and in Idaho and Nevada and Colorado and in the Southwest. There's a bill that would legislate old growth forest protection in Eastern Oregon. All across the West, there are bills in landscapes that are more controversial, with less collaborative shared vision and less community support than what we have built in the Columbia Highlands. It's time that Eastern Washington gets a wilderness bill in Congress.
How receptive are the members of Congress to these ideas?
I think very receptive. We obviously haven't crossed the tipping point. I'm not sure where that tipping point is. But a year ago, August, Senator Cantwell and Representative McMorris Rodgers hosted a listening session, a community forum in Spokane, on collaborative work in the Columbia Highlands. They heard about wilderness and forest restoration, and they were very impressed with the progress we've made. They felt that we needed to bring some other stakeholders in a little further. So in the ensuing 6 months, so through last winter until this spring, their staff facilitated a roundtable. And through many meetings, we were able to reach accords, as I described, with the tribes, with the mining industry, you know, improve communication with the ranchers, all the work I described earlier. We were not able to reach consensus. That would have been ideal. Any politician would love a consensus. But in America these days, you can't get consensus on breakfast. We can't all even agree that Elvis is dead. And not everybody agrees that there should be any wilderness in the Kettle Range or the Columbia Highlands. But we think that enough people agree. We think that more people agree than on any wilderness ever in this state or in many areas of the West. And we think it's time for a bill to be introduced and passed by Congress.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
We want people involved. We've run this campaign a little differently than in past. We didn't start in Seattle. We didn't go to Seattle City Council and ask for a resolution. We started in the affected communities. My organization, we're based in Bellingham. It's where I live. And we have an office in Seattle, but we also have offices in Spokane and Republic and Fieldstaff and Omak and Twisp and Orient and Lillooet, places like this, because that's where the work is. Not just the field work of understanding the forest and the wildlife, but the community work of building support and understanding. So you haven't heard about us as much here in Seattle as other parts of the state have. But now it's time. We're ripe. We've got a product that, you know, this whole state can get behind, linking wildlife populations from the Cascades to the Rockies improves the viability of our charismatic wildlife here in the Cascades in our own backyards. It's connected. Northeast Washington, Columbia Highlands is as much a part of Seattle as is the Alpine Lakes. So I hope people will get involved, write letters to members of Congress, send us money, come volunteer, come learn more. We'd welcome that.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Mitch.
Thank you, Diane.
You have just been listening to Mitch Friedman, Executive Director of Conservation Northwest, speak about the Columbia Highlands Initiative. For more information, check on the web at www.conservationnw.org. Again, that's conservationnw.org. The Sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the Streaming Archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, selected sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and kexp.org.